Welcome to .NET Rambles, a weekly podcast where Andy and Rowan discuss all things .NET related.
And welcome to another episode of .NET Rambles. Have we got an episode for you this week? It's an absolute cracker. We've got a very special guest. It's taken a lot of blood, sweat, and tears to line this particular guy up for an interview today. But I am very pleased to announce today that today we'll be talking to, wait for it, Andy. Welcome.
Hello, Rowan. People are going to be so disappointed.
Oh, no, absolutely.
You big me up way too much. So. Yeah.
Cool. How are you doing?
I'm good. I've never been a special guest before, but thank you very much. So,
excellent. Yep.
Yeah, I'm standing in for the other Andy, obviously. So.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, good stuff. Well, you know, you'll be just as good, if not better, I'm sure.
I'll try. Thank you.
Thanks. Well, let's start off today with our random fact. I wanted to cast our minds back to the beginning of the internet, back in 1989, when Tim Berners-Lee first invented the internet. Back then, he kept the entire World Wide Web, as it was known back then, which was rather small at the time, on his Next Cube from Next. And Next was obviously the company that was started by Steve Jobs after he was fired from Apple the first time. So,
yeah, it's an interesting bit of history, that really, isn't it? The fact that, you know, obviously all that time ago he created it, but the fact he was using a Next Cube for it, you know, that came from Apple, or from the guy who was from Apple. So that's quite interesting. But I don't think that's a big achievement. I've pretty much got the whole web on my phone here, on my desk. So,
I know.
It's nothing really. It's tiny.
It's come on leaps and bounds since then, hasn't it? It's incredible.
Yeah, absolutely.
But that in some ways sets the scene for what we're going to talk about today. Mm-hmm. And that is in the realms of JavaScript, really. So we're going to be talking...
Don't turn off yet. It's not... Not all about JavaScript.
It's not all about JavaScript. It's a JavaScript focus, but we're going to talk about how we can leverage .NET, .NET Core, and a particular area of JavaScript. But
yeah, to write less JavaScript, in fact. You're actually saying about writing less.
Ah, there you go. Well, see, lucky we have you on the show, lucky we've organized you for this particular episode. So let's start with a bit of an introduction, a bit of a trip down memory lane. Let's pick up from Tim Berners-Lee inventing the internet back in 1989, and move on to the history of JavaScript, really. So JavaScript itself was invented by a guy called Brendan Eich, and he created it in September 1995, in about 10 days, apparently.
See, you hear that banded around. You know, this is always, you know, is it a myth? Is it real? But yeah, it does seem to be what it took. He managed to do that in 10 days, which is impressive.
Sure is, isn't it? So he was a Netscape programmer, and he wanted to introduce a way into browsers that would allow browsers to run script that was interpreted rather than compiled. So back at the time, it was possible to run Java in browsers, but you obviously had to run Java applets, and Java has always been a compiled language. So you had to, you know, build your Java code, compile it, and then reference your compiled Java binary, basically from the browser via an applet.
Yeah, I remember the good old days of applets. Absolutely.
I mean, that was exciting, being able to run code in a browser. But
it
was Brendan Eich who sort of came up with the idea of introducing a scripting mechanism into the browser. So he did that in 1995, and then by 1997, it had gained popularity enough for it to be handed over from Netscape, essentially, over to the European Computer Manufacturers Association. Any idea what that is?
Never heard of them. No.
Never heard of them? ECMA.
No way. Seriously? Yeah. That's what ECMA is, isn't
it? That's what ECMA stands for, yeah. Right. So handed over to ECMA to look after in 1997. And then for the next 10 years, they managed to almost get to version 4. They didn't quite get to version 4 after 10 years. And that just that demonstrates the challenge of the internet and multiple browsers, I guess, and all the different you know, disagreements that would have come from the browsers not agreeing on how to implement particular standards.
It was the Wild West back then, wasn't it, between browsers?
Absolutely.
The browser wars.
The browser wars, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So by 2007, they still hadn't got to version 4. But back in 2005, a guy called Jesse James Garrett introduced a paper that introduced a brand new concept called AJAX. And that paper was called AJAX, A New Approach to Web Applications. And so that point was really a pivotal point for the internet, where the styles of websites really started to change to become, you know, very web app focused, with lots of AJAX included in them. Yeah. You know, obviously allowing things like partial page refreshes and HTTP requests made from within the browser without having to cause a full post back. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
So then by 2008. Obviously, ECMO version 4 still wasn't agreed. There was lots of pushback from all the different parties involved, you know, all the different sort of browser vendor parties. So that included the likes of Yahoo, Google, Microsoft.
Yahoo.
Who
are they?
Yahoo. And so they sort of came up with a project and codenamed it Harmony, funnily enough.
Ironic.
Yeah, which finally came to fruition in 2015, which became ECMAScript 6. So that was when ECMAScript 6 was released.
Hang on. So you said about they couldn't get version 4 agreed. They obviously couldn't get version 5 agreed then, if they jumped straight to 6.
They skipped version 5 and eventually created some Harmony, excuse the pun, in 2015. Then in 2009, that was an interesting point, because that's when the CommonJS project kicked off, which set out to define and promote JavaScript development outside the browser by using modules to package useful code and functionality up. So this obviously paved the way for Node.js as an environment to run outside the browser and to run JavaScript. So now the language JavaScript runs on both, you know, through browsers and on servers.
It'll never catch on, though, this Node.js thing. Nobody will use it.
Don't think it will. So that's a little trip down memory lane through the eyes of JavaScript. But where does that lead us to today? What are we talking about today then?
Yeah, right. So that's all, it does lead us really well onto this. So we're talking about a library called HTMX. And it was something I mentioned to you a while back. I've been seeing lots more articles for it and sort of seeing it pop up on blogs and people chatting about it more. And it just seems to be gaining a little bit of traction. People seem to be using it and liking it. And it's basically a really small open source library, JS library. So it's around 10K. And the idea is you add it to your website and then you can use it to communicate with servers. So the servers can be anything. I mean, we're obviously talking from the point of .NET. So this will work with Framework or Core. There's no reason why it won't work with both. So if you've got legacy stuff and you want to add some JavaScript enhancements to it, you can use this on that as well. And obviously from Core, it's the way it's going anyway. So, but it's not limited to that. You know, so if people are using PHP or Python as their backend servers, it can talk to that as well. So literally anything you can send a GET or a POST to, it is going to be able to send you data. So it basically wraps up, my view on this is it sort of wraps up, you know, years ago I used to write my own XHR calls to a server, and it basically wraps all of that up for you. And the way you use it is you actually use attributes on your HTML tags.
Okay. Yep.
So it's very reminiscent to me of things like AngularJS and a couple of other libraries that worked like that. So you add additional attributes to the tags, and those attributes are obviously interpreted and things get done for you automatically. So it basically, you know, you could have a tag that says, right, when this is clicked, call this endpoint on the server, and when the data comes back, place the data in, when I say data, it's actually going to return you HTML because it's server generated. So it's then going to place that generated HTML within a block of the tags that you've told it to, so you can replace a part of the page with the result. So it's a really nice way of updating a page.
Excellent. Okay, so we've got ourselves it's a JavaScript framework we're talking about. There are hundreds, if not thousands, of JavaScript frameworks and libraries out there. Yeah. It sounds like the point of difference for this one is that it provides a really easy way to basically perform AJAX, what we used to refer as AJAX operations, through the browser without having to have a whole load of, I haven't heard you mention view model code or any sort of custom JavaScript, but an attribute, you know, HTML attribute-based way of being able to do that. Sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's what I like about it, is it really doesn't get in your way. It doesn't force you to learn any new concept, or you know, that you don't have to add lots of libraries, you're not bundling stuff. It's literally just, you know, adding a small piece of JavaScript, and then that will take care of making the calls to your server, getting the call back from your server, and then actually updating the actual page. You know, it's nothing, like you say, there's no view models involved, there's not shadow DOMs, there's none of this sort of, you know, DOM diffs or any of that, as far as I can tell, going on. It's literally just replacing some elements.
Binding to objects in JavaScript doesn't exist. Okay,
no,
right.
Nothing like that, no.
Very lightweight.
It is, yeah, and all the work is being done on the back end. It's all being done on the server. So, you know, there's no way you can sort of, should I do this in JS? I could use some other libraries to do a little bit of manipulation of data here, and I could pass some JSON that's come back and then turn that into a table and bind it. No, none of that. It's all the servers used to generate all of this stuff. So obviously that's great if you've got a server there. If you haven't, a bit more tricky. But obviously, you know, majority of web apps that are built have a server of some sort behind them. So this is leveraging the server to do all the work. And it feels a bit like it's going back to the fundamentals of hypertext and actually using HTTP protocols in the way that they've sort of designed. And it's, you're using the power of the server, but adding on slightly to the HTTP protocol.
Got you. Yeah. So coming back to the fundamentals around hypertext, i.e. I make a call to the server, server returns me a hypertext document, and
absolutely,
then I stick that document in my page somewhere, or part of a document, and I stick that.
I was going to say, so that's the evolution of it, really. Yeah, it used to be, you know, you used to get a page back, and you then replace the page with that page. Great. Now, of course, we're returning small snippets, and you've sort of, that has gone on, obviously, things like React and Angular and stuff like that, they get small bits of data back as JSON, and they use that to then redraw themselves and actually update that data. But this is a similar way, but it is just replacing a small part of the page with the returned HTML. So I really like it. It's a really nice way of doing it. There's no complexity involved. It's really simple. Really simple to drop in and use it. So
gotcha. Yeah. Just on that point. Yeah. The questions that run through my head when you talk through HTMX are, well, I can do that with React and Angular, but I guess the downside is I need to learn React and Angular because they're massive frameworks.
Yeah.
They rely on, you know, view models and JavaScript. You know, lots of JavaScript and binding between your JavaScript and your markup. Then I think, okay, well, maybe I could have done that in sort of old school jQuery, but again, that relies on custom JavaScript being written to be able to do that. But I guess what you're saying here is, effectively, we don't. There's no need to write any JavaScript. It's just a matter of including attributes in your markup.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, like I said right at the beginning, this takes away the need to write JavaScript. It's really nice. Yeah, like you say, with React and that, you've got to learn them. It's a way of it. You've got to learn the whole ecosystem, really, for how it all works. And it's quite big. To me, it's always been quite big. I've never really learned React that well. I've dabbled in it. I've done a few sites with it. I've had to, you know, add things. I've never really done it from a whole project because I've not really been that sort of front-end dev. We've had people that are, you know, that React is their day job, and you know, it's a big thing to learn. So this really takes that away. And you know, it's nice because it gives you the ability that, you know, part of their website actually says the motivation behind this is that, you know, things like A tags and form tags, they're the only things that can make requests. And, you know, the question is why are they the things that do this? And, you know, historically, that's just because they were the tags that caused either a get or a post to go to the server.
Right.
But this obviously opens it up and allows any tag to generate. So, you know, you could click a P tag, or you could click a div tag, and they can all be wired up to.
That's really interesting, isn't it? Because it's almost like you're extending the HTML specification from your browser. You're able to cause your browser basically to make a post back from whatever DOM element you like. That's brilliant. That's really exciting.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously you can still use these things in the way they were meant. It's just to enhance it. So you could still use A's and forms if you want to stay like that. That's absolutely fine. But, you know, it opens it up to do other things. And, you know, things like click and submit generate events, or they have events that trigger them. So, you know, when you click the submit button of a form, it generates the submit event. But, you know, this allows you to actually do that from anywhere. So you get a benefit, and, you know, gets and posts are available, but you can go between them. So if you a lot of the time post is used to send form data back, lots of data. But if you're not sending lots of data, you can just keep using gets, or you could send a post. But it's up to you. This library lets you do whatever you want with it, which is really nice. And it's, you know, a post from anywhere. It doesn't have to be from within a form. You can just, you know, send this data as a post to the server. So, you know, it's quite nice.
Brilliant. Sounds good so far. Yeah. Excellent. So, so coming back to that idea of, okay, this seems like a really simple, lightweight library that I can include. What sorts of apps or websites or web apps would I look at using this for?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's you know, whether you've got a spa app or, you know, a simple sort of brochureware app where it's, you know, fairly static, but there might be some interaction. Or if you've got a fully fledged web app that's got security, authentication, and everything else built into it, any of those really, anything. I think when you need interaction with the server, and you want the server to generate some changed HTML, so you know it could be. Some examples really are, you know, if you've got some things on a website where you're selecting from, you know, common ones like cascading selects.
Yep.
So you might pick something from a select, which then populates another select,
right?
So picking from that select, maybe another select.
Got you. The case where you've got dependent select boxes.
Yeah.
So the options that you see in the second select box depend on the option that you selected in the first.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, historically, you might do that with you might send all of that down to the client in the first request. So you've got an array of the selects, and you know, you've got another array that says, you know, if you pick this first one, then use this bit of it. So you could do all that, and you've sent it all down. And of course, you know, clients might not use any of that, so it's a bit of a waste, but. You know, with this way of doing it, and the same as you would do in React or Angular, it's no different from a concept point of view. It's just how it's doing it. So, you know, you can quite easily say that when something in a select changes, make a GET request to the server to give you the content for the next select in the chain.
Gotcha. Which back in the old web forms days, you'd do with like a, you know, an on change or an on selected sort of server side event, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
And web forms would wire up, you know, the JavaScript to make the call back to the server.
Mm.
But I guess with this library, it's you know, it provides a means of JavaScript making a call directly back to the endpoint of your choosing, really.
It does. And I'll go through some other examples, but these are all really seem to be the really common things that you'd want to do in a website. And to be honest, most of the time, this seems to be, you know, the user does something which requires a small change in data or requires something updated. You know, so it could be, you know, if you imagine you're doing like a weather app. You might put a postcode in, and based on that postcode, it's got to go and get some sort of different data from the server for that area. Or, you know, if you're doing a currency conversion, it's got to take the amount you've put in and the currencies you specified and get that from the server, and then update it. It's not the sort of thing you can all push down to, you know, it's interactive basically. So, you know, anything type aheads, filtering lists, or infinite scrolling, anything like that, it requires more data from the server. And obviously, if you're doing that in .NET, a lot of the time, you probably say, well, I'll create an Angular app to do this, or I'll use React, or, you know, old school might even still use jQuery or JQLite or anything that does it. But this library sort of seems to be, actually, the common things you do is this. So, and that's all it focuses on. It literally just focuses on, you know, as you do things, as events fire, you can go and get data, you can update parts of the page. And pretty much, I think that's a massive amount of use cases for websites. It's literally just those small things that are happening.
Absolutely. So perhaps if you're then moving off into your slightly more complex spa that does require, you know, security and authentication and roles and, you know, custom headers and all of that sort of stuff, I'd imagine you can do that with, you know, with this library, but it might start to become a bit sort of cumbersome. Is that?
Well, I mean, obviously this sort of plugs into the existing way of working. So actually, you know, this is running on the page. When you're posting stuff, you're getting all of the cookies back, you're getting all the headers that you need anyway. So, you know, this ties into all of that, and it can just work with it. So, you know, if you make a request from this to the server knows where it's come from, and it's got the cookies, so it can work out who you are. So all of that stuff is just the same as whether you're using any JS framework, really. So yeah, it does all that. You get headers built into this. You can send headers back to it. You can get headers coming in with it. You can hook into things, which we'll talk about in a bit. All stuff like that is supported. So I can't really see much you couldn't build just having this library available. And it's a really small library compared to a few others. So, you can do auto refreshing as well, which is another common thing I've had to do. You know, you want to update things.
Brilliant.
And, you know, you can, in the past, of course, I've used SignalR for that, and that can be quite heavy. But if you want a really simple implementation of that, you can just do a polling from the browser to the server every 2-3 seconds, whatever you want, just to get updates, or, you know, every 60 seconds, it's up to you. But it's really, really simple to put that in. You know, it's literally a couple of attributes on a div, maybe, to make that div refresh every 5 seconds, which is, you know, massively simpler than
brilliant
plugging all that in yourself. And
exactly.
There's loads of examples of this. You can get loads of examples of this on the website if you want to take a look, which, you know, it's htmx.org to have a look at this. But yeah, they've got good examples, and it's really simple to do it.
Really cool. Excellent. So let's cover off then how step by step how you'd go about wiring in HTMX if you wanted to use it. We've sort of briefly covered it, but where do you start? What's the first step?
Yeah, so like any of these, I mean, it's really nice actually, because, you know, they give you various ways of doing it. The obvious way is if you use a CDN network, something like Unpackage has this available. I'm sure the other ones do as well. So you can download it from there. You just put a script tag in your code that pulls it in. You could have it locally as well if you want.
Yeah.
So you've got a version of it, and then you can pin it to a particular version if you don't want to rely on a CDN. But yeah, you just bung it in. So it's a script tag you put in, and then basically once the script tag's in there, that's it. You're off and ready to go. You just then have to literally add some attributes into your existing HTML tags. That's it. It's just nothing else to do. I don't know what else to say about it. I can't emphasize too much how simple it is to get started with it. Literally add a script tag, add some attributes, off it goes. That's it, done. There's no JavaScript to write, no bundling to do, absolutely nothing. It's so simple, really is.
Wow, that's really impressive, isn't it? It just gets out of the way, you know, drop a script tag in and off you go, include some attributes, and then you're off. Yeah.
I mean, you've got to write the stuff on the server side, but that's really simple. You know, these things are simple because you're doing it all the time on the server anyway. You might be writing some code that queries a database, gets back some records, puts that into a view model, then puts that view model into, you know, onto an HTML page, and, you know, you return a partial with a view model. That's all you've got to do on the back end, and then the front end will take care of itself with this.
Gotcha. So it might be worth looking at that a little bit more. So if we think about an example where we've got a button on our page, and we want to click that button, and we want that button to go off to the server and do something, and then we want the results of whatever the server responds with to update our page, how would that work?
Yeah, so that's a good example of one, really. So yeah, say you've got a button. I mean, it might be like we've got next page button. That's you know, and obviously the thing you've got to the bottom of the list, you've got next page. So basically all you're going to need, you're going to have a button, which is your HTML tag. That's simple. Yep. And you're going to tell that when this is clicked, so your trigger, so you'll put an attribute on it called hx-trigger.
HX, and you'll say, okay.
This is click.
HX is the prefix, a bit like the angular attributes. Yeah, NG. Okay,
that's
got
right.
you. So
yep,
this is HX, yep.
So HX-trigger. So this is what's going to trigger this event. So click.
So okay, so we're saying whenever we receive a click event, got you. Yep.
We want to post, probably. So do an HX-post and give it the endpoint to post it to.
Got you, and that'll post the form that we're within, I assume.
Yeah, that's right.
The form contents. Yeah.
Yep. So if you're within a form, you can do that, or you could do a get. That would do the same thing.
Got you. Yep.
Or you can actually override the post data that's sent with it as well. So yeah, it's very flexible.
Yeah.
And then basically, what you also have to tell it is the target that you want the data to go in. So if you do an hx-target, basically means when a user clicks on this button, send a post to the endpoint you specified.
Yeah.
And then use the content of the response to replace the element in the target
attribute with whatever
you've got back. So simple as that. So really, probably three attributes would give you that ability.
Wow, that's cool, isn't it? And the target, I guess you've got the power of sort of CSS selectors. So if you could select by ID or class combination of whatever
that's
you
it.
Want.
Okay. And again, this is, really, everybody knows it. It's just doing the CSS selector. So, you know, in the example we're looking at, you might have like a hash content or a hash page content, or, you know, a parent div or whatever, but whatever you've named your div, it'll basically replace the inner of that with
by name or by ID or by class
hash or dot that's it.
Wow, that's really easy, isn't it?
It is really easy. Yeah, stupidly easy, too easy. You sort of look at it and go, well, you know, this is great, this could save lots of work. Really.
Absolutely, because as we keep mentioning, we haven't had to write any JavaScript to do this. It's brilliant. No. It's just as if the browser sort of supports this natively.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, that's it. You know, a lot of this, you might look at it now and you might go, you know, things like Blazor, you'd probably use Blazor for a lot of this nowadays, and you're absolutely right. You know, that's C#, because the beauty of this is you're pretty much writing C# all the way. You know, you're doing a few attributes, but you're not having to get into the JavaScript. Yeah. And then you write some C# on the server, which takes care of talking to an API, doing conversions, getting data out of a database, whatever you've got to do, and then turning that into HTML that you can send back. So that's all it is. And obviously, you know, Blazor is a similar thing. You're doing JavaScript on the front and the back, but, you know, Blazor could be a bit heavy for this, so actually, or if you've got an existing website, you can drop this in and just use it, and it's really simple. So I think everything's got its place, and this is just a nice way to do so. I mean, we had something the other day where we wanted to make something a bit more interactive and add a feature for users, and, you know, we had to go away and build our own JavaScript to, you know, do auto refreshes, to call the server, and check some data that was coming back and all that sort of thing. And, you know, if we'd have actually known about this library a bit sooner and used it, I think this would have been a really good one to drop in. And it, you know, I think it probably took us a day and a bit to build that in and get it working properly. Yeah, I think we'd have been done in 10 minutes with this.
Yeah,
I really do.
Absolutely. Really, really good option. Yeah.
And it's, you know, like we say all the time on a lot of these calls, we're talking about, you know, the less code you write, the better, because if you don't write the code, there's no bugs in it. And, you know, we wrote quite a big chunk of JavaScript for that. We don't really have a JavaScript library in the product we're writing at the moment, because they want to keep JavaScript to a minimum. So there's no library as such. So it is pure vanilla JavaScript, which is good and bad. So there was a lot that we wrote for it. And obviously, you know, there could be bugs in it, there's things we might not have noticed or stuff like that. And, you know, this takes all that away, really. It's all done for you. So
marvelous. Really excellent. Nice. And like you say, it doesn't rely on any particular server-side technology, because it is literally a JavaScript library that you drop into your page. So you could use this even if your site was just a JavaScript site, and you found some endpoints that you wanted to get some data or HTML from, and you wanted to pump that into your site, you could easily use this, couldn't you? So that moves on to a good point. Actually, you mentioned from time to time you might need to tweak the headers or change the headers that you send through to the server, particularly in the context of, you know, perhaps security, or if you need to send some, I don't know, some custom header with some custom value through the server. Mm-hmm. Are you able to do that through here? Is it another attribute that you add, or is it some sort of, some sort of way of extending this? How flexible is HTMX?
So the obvious thing, probably when you say how flexible is it extendable? Yeah, they support extensions, so it's got an extension mechanism built in,
right?
Which is really easy to use, actually. They've got several extensions of their own that they provide. So you're talking about headers. I mean, one example they give is a thing called an AJAX header. So that includes the X requested with header that identifies AJAX requests. So, you know, you get that for free. They give you that one. So they've got, I'm just having a quick look at their list of extensions. There's probably about 20 of them probably that they provide.
Okay.
So that covers obviously common scenarios. But, you know, if there's one scenario you've got, like you say, you might have a custom header just for your website and, you know, your back end is doing it. Or like you say, it could be a different server and actually you need to do something different when you send the data. That you can just define your own extension. So it's as simple as basically doing, you probably put it in a separate JS file, but you literally just do htmx.define extension, give it the name of the extension, and then basically tell it what you want to override. So you can override things like any events that fire. So you could say, you know, on an event, you'll capture that event and decide actually if it's the event I'm interested in, do something. If not, don't bother. And there's a few other bits that can be overridden, things like transform response, is inline swap, handle swap, encode parameters. So they're the sort of extension points, but generally I think you're going to be able to cover most of those with whatever you need to do. And if there is an extension for it, I'm fairly sure there's going to be some other people that have written it, or it'll be simple enough to put yours in.
Absolutely. Just thinking through that case where you're calling an endpoint that you don't control, if you needed to transform the response that comes back, and you know, and perhaps you know, rework some JSON into some markup or whatever, you've got the ability to do that in the transform response.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the idea. Yeah, that's it. That brought it really well.
Got you. Yeah. So that's the case where you'd need to write your own JavaScript if you wanted to define your own extension. But like you say, there's a load of extensions that come sort of out of the box, as it were, that are available. So how do you then use those extensions? Do you reference them in your DOM element somehow? So in that button example, how do we then reference our extension that we've made?
So if you want to register your own extension, basically, like I said, you put it in a script, in a separate JavaScript of its own. So you're going to do the htmx.define extension. That then obviously you give it a name, and it's a Dash base name, so it could be my Dash extension.
Yeah.
And then basically you'll then use that in your attribute. So there's an attribute already called HX-EXT, so it's an HX extension.
Right.
And then in the with an attribute, you do the name equals basically your extension name. So in our example, it would be my-EXT.
So just to, gotcha. So you just reference your extension from your DOM model. Okay, so in our button, we'd have a an extra attribute in our button, which basically says, "Hey, and I want to use this extension."
Yeah, that's it. Simple as that.
The attribute that does that is HX-EXT. Gotcha.
Yeah, obviously you've included your script tag with your extension in it, so it's already been defined and added to their extension list, and then you can use it.
Yep. Got you. And then you've got access to all of the other attributes for use on that extension, and your overridden functions essentially get called. So if you've overridden particular events, or if you've overridden the transform response or handle swap or whatever, that will then get used. Okay. Oh, that's quite nifty.
Do whatever you want in them. That's right. Yeah. So I think really with having that sort of extension, there's not a lot you couldn't do with it. So if you do find there's something needed, you can quite easily drop into it and do what you've got to do.
Brilliant. Excellent. Yeah.
And again, like I said, if you look on their website, there's some extensions that are defined on there. So you can go and have a look and see if it covers the things you want to do first. There's various on there, things like there's even one about WebSockets. So you've got bidirectional communication. So it supports that sort of thing, which is pretty impressive. Preloads, restore. So you can trigger events when the back button's been pressed. So I think they've thought about a few things that are fairly common and that need to be done. So you don't need to actually write extensions for those. But yeah, it's worth having a look, see if it's there already.
Very cool. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, that's really interesting. Mm. Very interesting. Yeah. And it sounds like a really good option for a lightweight JavaScript library that you don't have to think about JavaScript for. You know, it's more like an extension to HTML, really, isn't it?
It really is. That's how it feels. Absolutely. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. It is a really simple way to add sort of more responsiveness and interactivity to your website without having to. Probably there are ways around it, but I'd probably say these are the larger JS frameworks. Yeah, obviously your Reacts and your Angulars. Well, I think we looked them up earlier to sort of see how they compare to this one. We said this one's about 10K, didn't we? Whereas your Reacts and your Angulars are actually sort of React 100K maybe. Angular half a meg, 500K.
Yeah,
it's quite a lot. And obviously, if you're not using all the features of it, it's a lot to include. And that's something you notice about a lot of websites these days. They're getting very, very big. They're very heavy to download. So, you could be getting megs down before you even actually get the UI available or do anything. So.
Yeah, absolutely. So a great lightweight sort of get out of your way alternative where you don't really need to learn anything, apart from a few attributes that you put into your markup.
Brilliant. Absolutely. Yeah. It's really, I really like it. I'm going to try and use it on a few personal projects and see if I can get it into any of the other projects I've got to do at work. So
Good stuff. Excellent.
I'll keep you updated on it.
Sounds brilliant. Yeah, please do. Excellent. Well, that then leads us to our open source project of the week, which given we've been talking about a JavaScript library or framework or library or framework or library, what would we call it? It's a framework, I guess.
Framework, probably this one, yeah.
Yeah. Our open source project is a small library that you can use, and it's called Day.js. And it's an alternative to Moment.js, which is a very popular date time library. It's been around for a while, but Day.js is a lightweight. Talking about lightweight equivalents, it's a lightweight option. It's only 2 kilobytes in size.
It's mad. Yeah, nothing is it.
It's incredibly small, yeah. So it's a minimalistic JavaScript library that allows you to parse, validate, manipulate, and display dates and times in modern browsers. It's largely Moment.js sort of compatible. So it's a very similar API to Moment.js.
Yeah.
It's immutable by default. So all operations that change the day.js object result in a new instance instead. So rather than changing existing instances, everything's immutable. And it's got internationalization built into it as well. So that's a big part of dealing with date times is handling all of that. So it's a good option if you're after a lightweight Moment.js alternative.
If you do need to do that, but obviously, if you're using HTMX, you can get the server to do all that work for you. But
you can do.
But no, it's a good, yeah, it's a good alternative to MamaJS. I mean, I've used MamaJS. It's one of those funny things, isn't it? It's like the underscore libraries that we used to use and things like that. Once you start using one, that's your go-to.
Yeah.
And you know, a lot of people like jQuery back in the day. That was just your go-to library for everything. So I think that's the thing. You get used to something. And I've used MamaJS all the time. And yeah, we found this DayJS and used that for a few things. And it's really good. Does the same thing. A lot more lightweight. Yeah.
Good option. But like you say, it's hard in our line of work because there are new libraries and new frameworks coming out weekly, you know, almost. And we do find ourselves having to learn things, new things all the time. And I think that's part of the challenge of being a good developer is being a good learner. Yeah. But I think human nature is sort of naturally to sort of fall back on what you know. It's easier to do what you know, isn't it? And you've sort of got to push yourself to learn new things.
Yeah.
But, you know, for those who are keen to learn something new, DayJS is good to look at.
Yeah.
If you're after a date time library and you haven't used Moment and you don't have a go-to library, have a look at DayJS.
Give that one a try. Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, I think we're out of time for this episode. So thank you very much for adjusting your schedule and joining us for this one for a change.
No problem. You're welcome. It's been a pleasure.
Oh, thank you. And I look forward to chatting with you again.
Yeah. Thanks very much, Ryan. It's been great. All right, speak soon.
Cheers. Bye.
Cheers. Bye.